Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. No set schedule, just whenever I get round to reading and reviewing a book, I put it up here on the podcast feed. So it means that it's been around about a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks since the last review that I put up here, because I actually finished this book that I'm going to review tonight around about a week ago, but I've been so busy I've not had time to review it. I've not even had time to start reading the next book, is what I normally do late at night, but I've just been so busy with stuff. But in a few days' time, 3 days' time, I actually fly out to Lisbon and then I take a boat across to Florida and fly back again, which means I'm going to have loads of time to read some more books and record new reviews and stuff like that. So send in your book suggestions. People have been sending in some book suggestions, some really good stuff there by email, luke@juggler.net. So tonight's book that I'm going to be reviewing is called Snow Crash by Neal Stephenson from 1992. I know I'm a bit behind the times because everyone else is talking about his latest book, which has just been released in the past few weeks or whenever it is and things like that. But I think this is my first Neal Stephenson book, although I'm quite convinced that I read his Babbage Engine one, whatever that was, the steampunk book that he did, but that was quite a few years ago now. I don't fully remember it. And the reason I'm reviewing this book and read this book is because on the Geek Nights podcast, they had this book club and they said, hey, there's lots of cool scenes and characters and there's lots of cool ideas and it's like the internet and kind of things like that. And I really liked the last book that they suggested, so I thought I'd give it a go. And I couldn't find it anywhere for a long time. And then I saw it new in a shop, so I thought, oh, I'll just buy it new, no problem at all. I trust these guys, Rim and Scott from Geek Nights, to suggest a good book for me to read there. Normally I only buy books new if it's a new book out by an author I know or like. Anyway, more about Geek Nights and their views on this book a little bit later. First of all, let's actually just set up the universe of the book. It's sort of set in this two kind of universes, which interact between the two of them, I guess. There's this one which is sort of this post-societal breaking down world, a dystopia, and it's everything is run by private corporations. It's like anarcho-capitalism taken to the extreme. And so, you know, the roads are run by people, you know, one company, the houses another, the police another, everything. Even pizza delivery is like wrapped up, you know, the mafia runs the pizza delivery companies and other services as well. Of course, there's other things like Mr. Lee's Greater Hong Kong, which is also mentioned in the book, and there's Narcolombia, which is a big player in the drugs business and things like that. And the US government is pretty much powerless. And not just that all these different companies have incorporated themselves as sovereign micronations within the United States. So you don't become an employee of one of these companies, you become a citizen. And say if you sign up for Narcolombia and you fiddle the books, the security forces can punish you in any way that the company sees fit because they're a sovereign nation within the United States. And with this company, it's pretty much a bullet to the head if they don't like your work. And much of the action in the book takes place in Los Angeles and on the western coast of the United States, or like the former United States. I'm not quite sure what they call it now. I can't remember back that far. Anyway, the other world that the story takes place in is called the Metaverse. And this is like an online virtual reality world that revolves around a street, like a single street. And unlike any system designed for easy access to information, each piece of information in the Metaverse has a physical location. So to find something, you have to walk there. You can't just say, hey, what's this? You actually got to go walk somewhere or, you know, take the train there or ride a bike there. It's like, it's not a nodal network, if you can call it that, sort of like where any place can be accessed instantly from any other place. It's literally like a street. So I'd actually think this, you know, in the real world, this is completely useless as a way of communicating efficiently or easily. Imagine Second Life or World of Warcraft or something like that. But now imagine that there's no internet alongside that. So you had to use Second Life for all of your online communications, or you had to live in a World of Warcraft world for all of your communications and interactions on the internet. So in the real world in the book, it's completely unbelievable, implausible, and a bit stupid as well. But at least it's interesting to read about. You know, there's things that happen in the real world. I'm thinking, yeah, that's pretty cool. In the Metaverse, though, on the other hand, in the whole book, it's actually really boring to read about because nothing actually happens there. Nothing of note happens there. There is a few bits and pieces, a little bit of action. But when you're reading it, you're just going, ah, okay. So it's a place where you can chop someone's head off, and the worst that can happen is that their computer disconnects. So it's like, what's the big deal? You know, where's the tension that's going to happen here? And at the end of the book, of course, there's a big action sequence in the metaverse. And it's just like, it's like two people playing a computer game at the against each other. And the stakes of the computer game are, well, there just doesn't seem to be any stakes within, like, anything at risk in the metaverse. Of course, there is one thing, and I'll deal with that in a little bit later. So, you know, the only time where the metaverse, actually when I was reading it, has really caught my attention was that everything, you know, is based around numbers that are the power of two, you know, like 2, 4, 8, 16, etc., etc., etc. Like the black sun, a bar in the metaverse, I think it's like 256 meters across or something, you know, similar dimensions. And I like this because back in the day, I actually liked to design deathmatch levels for Unreal Tournament, like a first-person shooter game. And then I'd get online and spend time shooting my friends in the head, you know, in the levels that I created. And when I made these levels, I kept the dimensions to these same kind of numbers, powers of two, multiples of eight, because for the same reasons that were stated in the book, you know, they're easier to design, and when the computer has to render them and do all that kind of stuff, it can do it really quickly and easily. And then the computer's running the program can also do it, you know, with less to think about. And I actually grinned quite a bit, where, like at the beginning of the book, where I realized that Neal Stephenson had arrived at this same conclusion about sort of programming basic virtual environments as I did. The thing is, I'm not a programmer, and I'm not even a very good designer, and the levels that I made, well, I had a lot of fun with them and friends did. I mean, it's not as if they were any good at all. Whereas Neal Stephenson is similarly out of his depth in this book. You know, he's designed this system and talked about the system, but like, okay, how do you email someone? Why can't I just call up some information? And people have to hack their system to get information easily. And Neal Stephenson, he talks about a computer, and he says a BIOS means built-in operating system. And I was thinking, no, it doesn't. It means basic input-output system. And a built-in operating system is firmware, right? And I'm not entirely sure of all of this off the top of my head, but I'm reading this book thinking, he's getting it all wrong. He's getting the computer terminology wrong. He's talking about computer hacking and like, this online world. And you know, sure, it's a fictional world. He can pass off whatever he likes as the fact in this world, but it's just like, it's just crap he's pulling out of his ass here. And I just don't know. I just want my science fictions to sort of know more than I do, like, about the basic facts of the issues that they're writing about, especially when so much of it is based on, oh, hacking and, oh, computer programming, oh, this is that and this is that. So there's another thing about the world that I didn't, oh, the world in the book that I didn't like, is that the two halves of the book, like I say, the real world and then the metaverse, but they can't really exist together. They do in the book, but if the outside world existed as it did in this book, the metaverse wouldn't, there's no way it could exist because it's all meant to be based on fiber optic network. That's all we're told about it in the book. But if the whole USA is split up into all these different little bits and pieces and infrastructure, it would just be impossible. You know, you couldn't build it, you couldn't maintain it. And who pays for the metaverse? It's never really decided. Maybe do you just pay to access it? So it's like you subscribe to the provider. But then the whole economy of the United States is completely down the pan. You know, people are talking in billions and trillions and quadrillions of dollars because there's massive hyperinflation. You know, if there's no like if there's no economy to run this kind of thing in, how can it all run? And you know, because all of the, when you're talking about the metaverse, it's all about, you know, the history of it. It's all about the coding. I want to know a bit more about the wiring and how the wiring of the metaverse links into the real world. And it's just sort of, you know, just glossed over, doesn't even think about that kind of stuff. So it feels very much like Neal Stephenson had two pretty good ideas, you know, this anarcho-capitalism world and this metaverse, this, you know, this virtual reality before virtual reality was ever big. You know, this was written back in the early 90s. So, you know, there's two good ideas there, or, you know, pretty good ideas, but they just sort of stuck together, rammed together, forgetting that there has to be some kind of logic between them in any world in a science fiction book. Well, that seems to have just been passed over. And finally, I said just finally before, I think, but finally, when is this book based? You know, is it based in the 20th century or is it based in the early 21st century? Because, you know, Bart Simpson t-shirts are mentioned as a popular fan. So I'm thinking, okay, you know, late 80s, early 90s, that's when Bart Simpson t-shirts will be around. But then it's like, okay, but it can't be then, because how can we get from the world that we knew in 1992 to a world where Bart Simpson is still being referenced but is actually existing in this book. And it's just like, I can't see a way to get to this book, the world of this book, from where we are now that quickly, or even quickly enough for the characters to still exist. For example, two of the main characters in the book are sons of people who fought in the Second World War. So they're sure, they could have been born when their fathers were quite old, you know. But you just, I was just trying to add it up in my head. It's like, wait a second, I can't work out how old these characters are when it's meant to be set. You know, they're referencing historical events, but I'm just thinking we couldn't have got that far yet. So I'm thinking this is definitely like an alternative timeline book rather than a future book, which is quite strange. So the story, after 10 minutes talking about the world here, the story of the book, hero protagonist is our protagonist. He is our hero. And actually, when I read that the first time, I sort of giggled a little bit because I'm thinking, oh, hero protagonist. Funny name. But his name is never actually explained in the book at all. It's like Neal Stephenson, he wrote the first draft of the book and he didn't put in the name of any of his characters. So he just went, okay, we'll call this guy the protagonist. No, the hero. No, okay, hero protagonist. And then he forgot to do like a search and replace on his manuscript and, you know, on the holding tag that he put down for that, you know, for the character there. Anyway, he starts off as a pizza delivery guy and, if a pizza is delivered late, Uncle Enzo, the head of the mafia who runs a pizza delivering company, he personally flies in on his helicopter to the customer's house to apologise. And again, when I first started reading the book, I thought, hey, this is really funny. It's meant to be a comedy. You know, it's really absurd. And, it, you know, he messes up, you know, the you know hero, he messes up and he crashes. And this career, who is called YT, and she, in the style of Marty McFly from the Back to the Future movies, she hitches a ride on the back of cars, and she delivers things. So she goes, oh, I can help this guy out, and delivers the pizza. And I was thinking, hey, this is really good fun, but it turns out it's not actually funny. You know, the things that happen aren't that funny, and the world that's set up is preposterous, but not in a comedy way, just in a sort of like, okay, someone's not really thought this through and is just going with it anyway. So anyway, this whole situation results in me not actually enjoying the book very much when I'm reading it. And also, the plot-wise, it results in Hero being fired from his pizza delivery company, and YT getting into the good books of the mafia. And they decide, Hero and YT, they decide to team up for the purposes of information gathering. And, you know, they're gathering information that can be sold via the CIA or the Central Intelligence Corporation, I think it's turned into in this book. And they can sell it to clients for money through that corporation. So then Hero goes into the metaverse to do something, I can't remember what it was, but something quite unimportant, just to sort of like hang out or something like that. And he's offered, by a character who I'll talk about in a second, he's offered this virtual drug called Snow Crash. Of course, the title of the book here. So you know this is going to be a big part of the book. But he doesn't take it. But a friend of his has also had it offered to him, and his friend takes the drug. And his friend is the main coder of the metaverse. And when he takes this drug, he thinks, oh, well, the worst that it can do, I'm in a virtual environment here because it's in the metaverse. The worst it can do is crash my computer. But it won't do because I'm like the main coder of the metaverse. I know how the metaverse works. You know, nothing can get through to my character. But what it does actually is that he takes the drug and it crashes not his computer, but it crashes his brain. Dun, dun, dun. Things happening in virtual reality affecting the outside world. So that's one of the main key things in this book. So Hero then has to work out what Snow Crash is, who made it, where it comes from, you know, this weird drug, and why are they spreading it. And this adventure, if it can be called an adventure in any way, because it's not actually that adventurous, pretty much takes up the rest of the book. Meanwhile, YT, this 15-year-old girl, is working for the mafia because she gets in their good book, you know, and they say, hey, why don't you come and do this stuff with us? Uncle Enzo, the head of the mafia, uses YT as a courier, because that's her job normally, but he uses her on some missions that he set up to find out the true nature of Snow Crash at the same time. And we follow the two of them and some other people. Anyway, making their life difficult is a guy called Raven. And Raven is meant to be the biggest, baddest mofo in the world. He's what they call an Aleut, someone from the Aleutian Islands in the North Pacific there. And he's trained all his life in killing whales by, like, hand-thrown harpoons. And he has poor impulse control tattooed across his forehead. And the thing that really makes him dangerous, and this is sort of like a semi-spoiler here, he's not only a badass and he kills people with knives and things like that, he rides a motorbike with an atomic bomb attached to his sidecar, in his sidecar. And if anybody kills him, it's wired into his brain remotely, wirelessly, and if anyone kills him, the bomb will go off. Of course, you find out about that, you know, sort of near the beginning. Now, I needed to spoil this, really, because this is really, really cool. You're thinking, wow, a guy who travels around with a nuclear bomb so nobody can touch him. Of course, he's going to be the biggest badass in the world. And I'm thinking, great, Hero, who is also a sword fighter, I'm thinking, okay, this is all going to come down to, in the end, Hero versus Raven. How is Hero going to take out Raven at the end without setting off the bomb? He's going to have to do all his hacking thing, and he's going to have to hack into Raven's brain, which is where, you know, where the wiring is in his brain. I'm thinking, this is going to be the whole thing about it. Because, you know, part of the book is setting up hacking the human brain, you know, in Snow Crash, it hacks the human brain. So I'm thinking, this is going to be it. The thing is, after it's set up, it's completely forgotten, this whole motorbike thing with a bomb in it. Raven just discards his motorbike, like, part of the way through the book, and it's never mentioned again, or hardly ever mentioned again. At the end, Hero pretty much has nothing to do with taking down Raven. Another character takes out Raven. And when he's killed, again, I'm not really spoiling anything, because he is the main baddie in the book, you know, or Raven is one of the main, you know, antagonists in the book. And so, of course, he's going to die, you know. So the bomb isn't even mentioned at the end. I'm thinking, wait a second, if Raven's just died now, where's the big explosion? Okay, maybe the bomb goes off far away, you know, and the main characters wouldn't have seen it, but the places where the bomb would be, where the places where he would have left his motorbike, were either where the main characters are who are just taking out Raven, you know, when they're actually killing him, it would be parked up near there, or it would be in the place where Hero is at that same point in time. So what, somebody has to die at that point, surely somebody has to die. So, you know, it's just skipped over. I'm just thinking, wait a second, this is the main tension, this is the main, you know, this is the main job of Hero, to take out Raven and you know, not to let the bomb set off, and it's just forgotten, just completely, utterly forgotten. Very, very disappointing. 0 marks for all that thread of the book. So you know, the main job of Hero turns out isn't to take out Raven, it's to find out more about the Snow Crash virus. Sorry, and here begins the most tedious and infuriating section of any book I think I've read this year. Okay, before the book begins, Hero knows nothing about Snow Crash, the virus. Thankfully, somebody does know all about it. Some hacker and some intelligence agent, you know, whose name is irrelevant. He dies right at the beginning. So he knows all about the virus, and he's killed by Raven. Again, not really spoiling anything there at all. You can see it coming a mile away. Thankfully, he has all his data backed up, sorry, for my spoonerism. And through no skill of his own, Hero sort of just gets a copy of the library of information, along with the librarian, who's sort of this kind of artificial intelligence avatar kind of thing that Hero can talk to in private, in his own mini kind of metaverse that he has on his computer. So Hero's job is to find out what the other guy has already found out. So we've got chapter after chapter of Hero just asking questions and having stuff explained to him in tedious detail at great length, pages and pages, whole chapters, 3 chapters in a row here, another 2 chapters here, another 8 pages here, another just pages of it, just pseudo-scientific babble coming out of the you know, librarian's mouth, talking about the origins of language and how information and symbols are processed by the brain and neurolinguistic processing and all that kind of stuff. And the whole story is tied back to the Tower of Babel story, which in this world of the book is meant to be some kind of historical event, you know, and how it's like a mind virus that was written, you know, by some kind of god, priestess, historical figure and made everyone speak in tongues, you know. And again, I'm going into tiny little bit of detail. If you read this, you know, it goes into a lot more tedious detail. The thing is, I'm actually quite interested in biblical studies myself. You know, I've read the Bible a number of times, once as my life as a crackpot fundamentalist Christian, not my fault, that's how I was brought up, and later as just for, you know, private study and just, you know, interest of my own. And I really, really dislike the approach that this book is taken of saying, okay, we're going to treat this as some kind of historical notion, you know, in a completely unscientific way of looking at history, about looking at ancient civilization, at looking at ancient events, of the ideas of religion, of how they used to pertain to the world and stuff like that. You know, it's based on ancient civilizations, this book is, and based on people who actually released mind viruses in the world that they're processed out of primitive languages? You know, that's what this book is based on. And you just got to try harder. You can't just come up with just crap ideas like that and then just, you know, that you know it's a bad idea if you've got to spend that long explaining it. If you've literally got to, like, copy word for word other people's, you know, whole essays and theses into the book, you know, it can't be that good idea if you've got to, like, explain for it and apologize for it as you go along. I talk more about the sort of gene, meme, virus kind of ideas explored in the book, but I don't want to just go on about that thing. Just to say, it's like, it's written by someone, I made in my note here, it's like someone who read any of Richard Dawkins' books, but while smoking crack, or something like that, because he just completely missed the point on massive parts of it. It turns out there's not just one snow crash virus, there's two. One that works via software, and one that works in the real world, but there's only one explanation given to both of them, and it misses both and falls into the middle. And I'm just thinking, just make your mind up, talk about one thing. Anyway, two more really bad things about this whole thing where, you know, hero is talking to the librarian. First, the librarian is the most infuriating character ever. Like, every second line he goes something like, oh, sorry, I'm not programmed to understand metaphor, or, oh, I'm sorry, I can't talk about this because I'm a computer construct and I can't analyze language and concepts like magic and stuff like that. It's just like all the time he's just talking about how useless he is and how he can't understand. Every time I'm just going, oh, okay, here we go, okay, I'm not going to read this as a novel, I'm going to read it as some kind of, like, you know, thesis or essay or something like that. And it just hits this and it just kills me dead. Like, the conversation stops flowing immediately. The most annoying thing. No, actually, that's the second most annoying thing. The most annoying thing is Hero, he hears something like from the librarian and he doesn't know what he's talking about. This is all new to him. He's not the expert here. And suddenly he just leaps to a conclusion. And the librarian will say something. Hero will just go, ah, that sounds like what us computer hackers will do. It'll have to obviously work the same way that us computer hackers do. And it's just like, no, you can't just draw analogies between things and then say those analogies are actually what the world is like in the real world. You can't do that. You can't base your decisions and apply analogies to the real world in that way and then, you know, work on the axioms of your analogy and expect them to come true in the real world. You just can't do it. And it's just like, you know, Hero just spouts something off the top of his head, and that what he just spouted off the top of his head becomes a key idea in the book. You can't do that. You can't just pull it out your ass. And that's what this hero in the book is doing, and that's what Neal Stephenson in this book is doing. Anyway, oh no, there's actually one more thing about all of this, you know. No, two more things, actually. Oh man, I just made some more notes here. I forgot actually how much this pissed me off in the book. Hero didn't do anything valid. He didn't actually come up with any way to get this information himself. He is literally handed it in whole form, and then it's just explained to him, and that's it. He doesn't come up with anything himself. He doesn't have to seek anything out. He has to do no research by himself. It's not like a murder mystery or something like that, some kind of thriller where people are going, oh, I wonder what's happening here. I wonder what's happening here. No, people just tell him. Which is really annoying, because the whole thing then becomes pointless. Why don't they just have the real character? Why don't you tell the story about the real character, how he came up with these ideas? And then I'm thinking, great, finally we've missed off the librarian. You can see, okay, he's got everything he wants for the librarian. No more librarian pieces. And then towards the end of the book, Hero then goes and explains the whole thing to other people. He literally sits there and he just goes all over it, all again, pages and pages and pages of Hero talking about what he read, the background, the history, the motivations of the ancient gods, the motivations of the people now. Let me explain it to you piece by piece by piece. I made a note. Pages 369 to 381 goes back over stuff we've just read in the book. I've never been so angry. I was literally just reading going, oh, man, 12 pages right near the end of the book. It interrupts a huge action sequence, like, and it's just a lecture. Hero just telling us stuff we already know, just going, oh, and then this, and then this, and other characters are going, wait, what do you mean? He's like, no, don't interrupt me. I've not finished yet. I need to continue. I was like, oh, for goodness sake, just get on with it. Like, in real life, if he'd have done that, you know, or not in real life, in the real life of the book, if he'd have actually done that, he would have taken maybe, what, 20, 30 minutes? Meanwhile, the rest of the people are racing against the clock to save the world, or to save Los Angeles, or whatever is at stake at this point of the book. It's like, for goodness sake, isn't it normally like the antagonist, like the main bad guy who sort of starts monologuing? No, not in this book, you know, because there isn't a compelling bad guy at that point in the story. We've just got Hero, and I'm sick of him by now. I don't care about him at all. And he just goes and lectures me for 12 pages. 12 pages of uninterrupted shit that we've already just listened to. Well, read. Anyway, wow, sorry about that. I'm just so angry that I actually had to sit down and read this book. Anyway, let's get on to a bit more. The writing style of the book, pretty much aimed at 17-year-old boys. You know, action, all confusing as well. Hero, got samurai swords, what's all that about? Never really explained. Well, it's sort of explained. You know, at one point, he cuts someone's head off. This is my point here. He cuts someone's head off. The way it's described in the book, literally, he cut his head off. That's actually what it says, you know. He's going to do something, it just said, he cut his head off. You know, and once they actually say that in the book, you know, once it's actually written down there, you get a few more lines a bit later about his motivation and what led up to it and all that kind of stuff. And that just happens a lot. It's like, you know, we're told lots of things and then I'm wondering, what happened? You know, what order did things happen in there? You know, there's a whole mixing up of the timeline at the beginning of the book, the structure of the book. Two things seem to be happening at once. Then you realise, no, one thing actually happened 2 weeks before the other thing. Or did they? Or did it do that and then skip 2 weeks? But it didn't tell me it skipped 2 weeks, and 2 weeks just doesn't exist in this character's life, or it's mentioned as just a throwaway job. It's like, oh, Hero doesn't have a job anymore. And then YT's storyline catches up when it's not explained what she did in that 2 weeks. You know, she just goes 2 weeks of her normal life again and then gets involved with the mafia, and I'm like, oh, wouldn't they have called her back like the next day rather than 2 weeks later? I don't know, it seems like it's a bit too convenient not to have that happen. It might be probably explained, maybe if I sat down and read this thing again and worked out the storyline, it would make sense, but it was very confusing to read it. And that's at the beginning of the book too, and it was a bit of a stumbling block at the beginning of the book. Another huge complaint about the book: it's based on coincidences. This person just happens to run into this person who just happens to be related to this person who just happens to have worked on this project, who randomly stumbled into this person who happened to know this fact about someone he randomly spoke to again. For example, at the end of the book, don't want to give it away, but there's actually a really deep connection between Hero and Raven. And I was reading it, scratching my head, going, wait a second. So all along, these two were... what? Seriously? And it's just not explained, and it doesn't go into it, and it's just pointless. And it's like this big coincidence is all the way through. It's like, okay, Hero, what did he do? Okay, he was a guy who did this and knew this person. That's the only reason he's in the book. All the other things that Hero does could have been, you know, carried out exactly as well, just as well, by other characters in the book. Which is really, really disappointing. Technology in the book. Let's get quickly onto that, because I don't want to go on too long about this book. The coolest thing, I guess, the thing that I enjoyed most is I guess, some of the ideas about information technology I did like quite a bit. But in the real world, there's the rat thing, which is this mechanical hound from Fahrenheit 451. Pretty much the same kind of thing, except on acid, on speed, with a nuclear engine in it and with a brain taken from a dog. And one of these actually, you know, they're normally used for security. So you have these there and they can go out and bite people and take people away. They use a lot on, Mr. Lee's Greater Hong Kong. He uses them quite a bit. And at the end of the book, one of these saves the day. But it's based on some random coincidence with one of these characters set up halfway through the book. You see it coming a mile away, but then it's all just based on a random coincidence. And it's just, oh, for goodness sake. Another thing that you see, another bit of technology you see coming miles away was the vaginal dentata. And you go, okay, you really see that one coming. It's quite disappointing. Rest of the technology in the book, I guess basic sci-fi stuff. But it always seems to be introduced just to show how cool it is. There's the reason gun. And you're thinking, okay, the reason gun is good. But, you know, it didn't actually progress the story or make any themes or anything like that. You know, it hasn't any impact on the story in any way. Another example, Hero buys a motorbike. And we've explained in detail about how it works and his armor and, you know, his sort of stuff that he wears when he gets on it and how fantastic he rides it and stuff like that. And then he rides it for a while and then just discards it. You know, the plot would have functioned equally as well if he'd have taken the bus. But no, he has to get there on a bike like you see in Akira. You know, it brings back one of those sort of super futuristic bikes, you know. As far as gadgets go, I did like YT's skateboard. Of course, I just mentioned this. She's called YT because her name is, you know, her nickname is Yours Truly. Again, that could have been really good if they, you know, if Neal Stephenson saved the fact that she was called YT, Yours Truly, until the end of the book. But no, he sort of reveals it in the first, you know, two or three chapters of the book, and you're thinking, oh, okay, so YT means yours truly. That could have just, that little touch there, if you'd have just put it in, it would have had a little bit of mystery about, oh yeah, why is she called YT? And then at the end of the book, yours truly, like, I'm called yours truly, I'm called me, would have been a nice reflection to the name of hero protagonist, which you reveal at the beginning of the book. Hero protagonist, yours truly. The two main characters of the book. And he could have, like, revealed the names at opposite ends, and it would have tied it together. You know, hero protagonist's name would have made sense when we worked out why T's name was yours truly. Anyway, just threw that fact out there. Anyway, she rides a skateboard, which is pretty good. And it's, you know, the way I look at it is like, okay, Neal Stephenson, he saw Back to the Future and he wants the same kind of hoverboard thing going on, holding onto the back of cars with your hoverboard. Thing is, explaining the physics behind anti-gravity and force fields and stuff like that would have been a bit too much. So he comes up with this idea, a pretty cool idea, I must admit, of computerized suspension with extending wheels and mechanisms that let you slide and glide gracefully over any surface, you know, as smoothly as though you're on an escape park in our real world. And why to use this to get out of many situations at high speed and, you know, to zip around the city. That's pretty cool. Oh, yeah, talking about explaining physics and stuff. I was reading this book and thinking, does Neal Stephenson know Newton's third law of motion? Seriously, every force has an equal and opposite force. Every motion, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. You push one thing in one way, the same amount of force is pushing you back in the other way. Except not in this book. For example, say you're on a skateboard and you're moving quickly towards, say, just for an example, some glass doors. And you want to get through the glass doors, so you've got this charge in the front of your skateboard, which goes bang and it blows the doors open. Now, the force of a blast, which goes forward, you're moving forward, the force of the blast also goes forward. So it must have something to brace against. Otherwise, the force that blows the doors out and blows 20 people into the street is going to push you backwards at the same amount of force. Now, let's just get this over with. Okay, a 15-year-old girl on a skateboard is not a suitable object to brace against for an explosion that blasts the front, like the front of a... It's a police station. At this point, you know, YT has single-handedly fought a way out of a police station against armed guard through bulletproof glass at the end of the thing, you know. And she's, you know, someone touches her arm and they get blown away and she sprays this and they fall over. And I'm thinking, wait a second, this is a 15-year-old girl. How heavy is she? Is she tied to the floor? You know, does she have lead in her backpack and lead legs and lead bones? You know, what's all this stuff bracing against? What's all this force, you know? Come on, Neal Stephenson. You know, get a little bit of a clue to physics and things like that, or at least explain it a bit better. You know, maybe this, you know, maybe he had in mind exactly how all these things work, but you've got to put it out there. You've got to at least give me a chance. So at the end of this book, I was really disappointed, by the ending as well, because again, there's kids on skateboard and suddenly like loads of other kids come and help out at the end. I'm like, wait a second, it's like the end of a bad Disney film. And again, another thing that I disliked about at the end of the book, again, I can't really spoil it, but if Hero is really as clever a hacker as he's portrayed with his final thing that he does in the book, why didn't he use those hacking skills earlier on in the book? Now, okay, get to the end of the book, then there's the author's notes and thank yous, and it's pretty much two pages of Neal Stephenson apologising for writing a crap book, or being crap at writing a book. Wait a second, I'll just get the book here, I'm not kidding. Let me just quickly skip here. Okay, what we have is just, sorry, I quickly looked to understand this, to remember here again. Okay, he talks about how his the writing of the book was really, you know, hard, and his pitiful efforts, and he inflicted his writing onto his friends to study it, you know, and how he left technical inaccuracies into the book, you know, for the sake of a bad pun, and you know, he mangles theories of other people and puts their words into the mouth of librarian, and he says sorry for it if he's done it wrong, and he portrays other people's ideas in ways that aren't as good as the people who came up with those ideas in the first place. They could have portrayed them a lot better, and he says sorry for that as well. And he said he spent more time fiddling with his Mac, doing imaging stuff on his Mac than actually writing the book. And actually the main thing is, the key thing that I didn't know about this book before I started reading it, until I actually got to the author's note at the very end, is that it was originally intended as a comic book, as a graphic novel. And I'm thinking, wait a second, this explains everything. He was just going to write the words, and somebody else was going to do the pictures, draw all the pictures, and do all the artwork. And I'm thinking, this explains it all. You know, it's the writing is terrible. The book is terrible. It's like, okay, you've got ideas that are best expressed with pictures. Great. And you turn those pictures into words, but you're not actually good enough to write down the words in a better way, so you end up with a bad book. You know, he uses a motorbike when a bus pass would have done the same job. Of course he does. It was meant to be a comic book. You know, no wonder the language is written at the level for maybe 17-year-old geeks. No wonder the main character is a pizza delivery guy who also happens to be the best computer hacker in the world and the only one who can save the day, and also happens to be the best samurai sword fighter in the world, who happens to also just be fantastic with a gun and fantastic with this. And it's just like, wait a second, it's a superhero book. It's just like, it's just rubbish. No wonder the world doesn't make sense. It was never meant to be explained that much in depth. It was meant to just be portrayed as sort of an image of a dystopian world with hints at what's going on in the background. But as a novel, he's had to go into all this detail himself, and he's just not good enough at writing it down. He's not good enough at coming out with the ideas himself, you know. Like I say, these worlds are illogical and inconsistent. They make sense in a comic book, maybe. You know, I don't read any comic books, but I can see why this stuff would go over well. But as a novel that was told I was going to like it, yeah, it's just really bad. And the thing is, this is the worst thing about this. We've got this, like, at a fundamental level, this book is badly written, badly structured, badly paced, badly plotted. You know, it's filled with pointless and stupid characters, none of which I cared about. There was actually one character which I actually quite liked for a while, YT, and then near the end of the book, she just does stupid shit. And like, I'm just like, don't do that. How can I care about anything that happens to you now if you're going to do, like, retarded, ignorant stuff like that? And it's like, oh, it's like, I liked your character. You were the good one here. Hero, you know, gun to the head. Thank you very much. You know, YT, I'm like, okay, punk kid, we can deal with this, though. She's quite interesting. But by the end of the book, I'm just like, die in a fire. Anyway, yeah, the bad thing about this is that I only covered a few of the things I didn't like in the book. There's just pages, and there's so much more I could talk about of stuff that I disliked, but I can't really share all of that without spoiling it. You think I might have spoiled little bits about this book? No, there's so much more in this book that I could talk about. Other characters who I've not even mentioned here that I could talk about, but I'm not going to. So you're thinking, okay, if you disliked it so much, why did you even finish it? Well, this comes down to, it was a recommended book by Rim and Scott from the Geek Nights podcast on their book club series. In their book club, you know, they say a book that we should read, you know, and us listeners, we read it, and then they record a show where they talk about the book in detail with spoilers and what they like about it. And, you know, they did this with the previous book, The Prince of Nothing. I read it, thoroughly enjoyed it. Really good book, fantasy book. That's why I didn't review it here on this show. And I really liked the show. And they said, next book, Snow Crash. And they read a little bit about it. You know, Hero thought he was going to be the biggest badass in the world. But Raven, you know, that position is taken. Raven is the biggest badass in the world. And I'm thinking, yeah, you know, when I started reading about these guys, I'm like, yeah, okay, this makes sense. Anyway, so I thought, okay, I'll read the book. And then after, you know, I finished reading the book, forcing my way through, thinking, okay, these guys really like the book. They said it was like a fantastic book and it was massively influential. I'm not denying it. It is a massively influential book, but it doesn't, you know, it doesn't get over the fact that it's a pile of crap. Anyway, so I listened to their podcast about it, and they basically agreed with most of the points that I've gone over here. You know, they said that it's confusingly written, and Neil Stephenson can't write action sequence, and he said the characters, they don't like them, you know, Rim and Scott don't like the characters, and, you know, the punk kid and this, and, you know, how it's just porn for teenage geeks, you know, not actual, like, sexual porn, it's just written as like, hey, here's a cool idea, the geeks are like this, hey, the 17-year-olds are like this, hey, here's some cool stuff just for the sake of the cool stuff, hey, here's a bad pun just for the sake of a bad pun. And they said all this stuff, and I'm like, yeah, I agree with you. Couldn't you have told me this before I read the book, not in the spoilers, like in the pre-spoilers episode of it, you know? And I didn't want to read all about all of that. Anyway, the things that they said that they liked about it were the ideas behind it, you know, the ideas of the world or the metaverse, and the ideas behind, you know, and how much the real world in the book coincides with the internet in our real world. And, you know, I see that in a way, you know, I can see they can be compared, but I don't really see what the big deal is there. If you're going to, like, in the book, you're going to describe how the internet's going to be in the future, but you get it wrong, but something else also could be applied to it. You know, it's like, you can't just take the predictions of the book, discard them, and then take other things in the book and go, perfect hit. You know, it's like shooting a bullet into a blank wall and then, you know, walking up and drawing a target perfectly centered around the bullet hole and then going, hey, dead on target. No, you know, 10 out of 10 for effort. You know, definitely Neil Stephenson has some ideas, and some of the ideas are good, but, you know, you just got to try harder. And the other thing that they liked was the hacking of the human mind, you know, the whole sort of, like, virus and memes and things and the neuro-linguistic programming stuff. And they said they found it interesting and how it's, you know, it's really interesting to do all of that. Well, I find the idea interesting, but the way it's explored in this book, the overall theme could be interesting, but the way it's done here is just stupid, shallow, tedious. It's the worst part of the book. It's the most nonsense part of the book. And just as an aside, neuro-linguistic programming, NLP as it's called, is a load of crap. You know, it's pseudoscience. It's just there's nothing there to it. You know, the whole ideas are just nothing there. And I actually saw this firsthand. This is the aside. A few years ago, I did a corporate event. I did one of my juggling shows at the Neuro-Linguistic Programming World Congress or World Conference or whatever it was called. You know, I mean, I was just there as a juggler, but you know, I saw these people doing stuff. I'm like, weird. This is like almost like a bizarre cult. Not really a cult, but you know, it's all that kind of like, oh, we can control mind and behavior by saying stuff and believing stuff and all this kind of stuff. It's like, no, you can't. Anyway, it came down to the fact that Rim and Scott liked the book because of the great ideas behind it, and that the rest of the book, while lacking, you know, they can forgive the rest of the lackingness of the rest of the book because they enjoyed the ideas so much. The thing is, I really wish I'd have listened to their spoilers episode before buying the book new, because if they'd have said, you know, if I'd have known beforehand that, you know, Neal Stephenson isn't actually very good at writing anything, I probably wouldn't have bothered with it in the first place. You know, the end, they said they were really disappointed by the ending, that it was dumb and disappointing, that they didn't like the characters. It's just like, oh, man, if I'd have known that before, I wouldn't have spent my money, I wouldn't spend my time on this book at all. So this is actually probably my longest episode yet, I guess. So I really just got to finish this up and get out of it. Let me just say, this book is really, really bad. Forget about how influential it is. Forget about the hype. Forget about how it's in the list of top books of the 20th century and all that kind of stuff, because I was just looking on Wikipedia to make sure that, you know, I was actually getting everything right, because I read it a week ago, so I want to make sure I got all the names correct and things like that. You know, forget all of that. Forget the ideas behind the book, because they're not very good. Or even if they are very good, it's not worth putting yourself through the unmitigated wank that this book is to get to the good stuff, because it's not even worth it at all. Don't believe the hype. It's the biggest pile of shite I've read in a long, long time. Actually, I was a bit curious about Neal Stephenson's latest book, Anathem, but there's absolutely no way I'm going to touch another book by Neal Stephenson for a long time, you know, because this book was so bad. So I'd give this book 0.5 stars out of 5, but I pretty much, I'm going to reserve that, I think, for the books which I don't actually finish. No, in fact, I actually only finished this because of the recommendation from Rim and Scott. Because all the way through, my girlfriend was going, oh, shut up groaning, because I was literally reading the book going, oh, listen, I was stabbing myself in the eye with a rusty spoon. No, I wasn't quite doing that. But really, it was painful, really painful to get through to the end of the book here. So yeah, I think I'm going to give it 1 star out of 5, because like I say, when reading it, there are a few things that I enjoyed. So anyway, yeah. Let me finish up. 1 star out of 5 for this book, but seriously, it's on the lows. No, I'm going to give it 0.9 stars out of 5. There you go. Because it's not as bad as 0.5 stars, but you know, I can give fractions of scores. Anyway, the next book that I'm going to read is a book that I'm sure I'm going to enjoy a lot better than this. The Dreaming Void by Peter F. Hamilton. He's got a good track record, no matter some of the stupid stuff that he puts in his book. I've never read a book by him and not enjoyed it for the most part. Generally, the ends of his book, the big conclusion, the denouement of the book, normally quite weak. But up until then, character development, top notch. You know, stories, you know, ideas, adventures, the world, 5 stars out of 5 stars for a lot of that stuff. He really just lets himself down at the end of pretty much every book I've read. But I know I'm going to enjoy it. That's why I bought it new. So anyway, that book next, Dreaming Void, Peter F. Hamilton. Email me, luke@juggler.net, juggler.net. Some people sent me an email to a different email address saying, oh, I didn't quite understand what you said. Was it juggler, jugglers, juggling? No, luke@juggler.net. Anyway, that's my email address. Email me if you agree or disagree or whatever. Catch you later.